90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
Brian Levinka.
Andrew Evanson.
Matthew Williams.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. Tonight on Queer Voices, the Rothko Chapel will be holding a free event Saturday morning in commemoration of World AIDS Day. So we're going to be talking with one of the organizers about the event and its significance for our community. And then we're going to talk about Ray Hill. And Ray Hill liked to talk and liked to talk about Ray Hill, so we're going to talk about Ray Hill for him. And I don't know, Jack, are we going to have news wrap? Are we going to be able to fit that in?
We're going to play this by ear. You know, usually our show is pretty well defined, but I know, first of all, I know, Glenn, you can handle it. It really depends on how we're going to have in the second segment when we talk about Ray Hill's life. It's a celebration. We're sort of going to play it by ear. We're going to have people come in and come out because we don't have enough microphones. But we're just going to tell stories that about Ray, of the stories he told about us and stuff like that. So we're celebrating the life that he had and the influence he had on this community and on this radio station.
Austin, you got the gypsy in your eye. We have four good ones behind us. Now you think I'm too possessive, though your head is on my knee. Your mind is just outside of town. Your ears are ringing for that carefree tambourine. There's a caravan tonight. It will be passing by a window. We have many years before us. Last night while you were sleeping, I put patches on your pants. And I watched you in your dreams, and I waited for the sun to bring you home, to bring you home, to bring you home. And if the freedom your heart embraces is nothing but a vision in the sand, oh, I'll be waiting here. I'll be your oasis, I'll be your promise, your promised land. Austin, you got that fever in your head. You think security confines you. My laughter weighs you down. You know the fault is in our ears. There's no difference in desire. I used to wander with my father's violin. There's a caravan tonight. It approaches in the market. There's a rushing of flounces and rhythm swinging feet. There's a boy in scarlet sashes, and he's calling out the names of the lovers that he left here once before. Oh, once before, once before. And if the freedom your heart embraces is nothing but a vision in the sand, oh, I'll be waiting here. I'll be your oasis, I'll be your promise, your promised land, your promised land, your promised land. Austin, you got that gypsy in your eye. There's a boy outside our window with a moon upon his shoulders. Roll your kisses on my lips. Your senses reach beyond control. Your heart it's racing with this crazy castanet. There's a caravan tonight. I can hear in the distance. You had many roads before you. Last night while you were sleeping, I put patches on your pants. And I watched you in your dreams. And I waited for the sun to bring you home.
This is J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to Queer Voices, and that artist was Stephen Grossman with the title track Caravan Tonight from his 1974 album. That album was noteworthy because it was the first album on a major label with openly gay lyrics, and the song was chosen for us by Ray Hill.
So Ray was an institution in this city. He helped start this radio station. He certainly was one of the beginnings of doing queer radio here on KPFT, and of course the prison show. And he worked on so many other projects, including civil rights, prison reform, and GLBT rights. I got to know Ray approximately, I'd say 15 feet from where I'm sitting right now. I walked in this station in 1982, and I said to Ray, I wanted to do what Glenn's doing right now, is running the board, because who was ever running the board at the time here at KPFT was not that good. And Ray sort of ignored me for a couple weeks, and I guess that was sort of his, the way he did things back then, until he got to know you. But I think one of the best things I can say about Ray was sort of like a farmer. He planted seeds, and he helped people grow into the roles that they did. Ray didn't have an entourage. Ray was sort of very much an individual. Ray had no problem going out and protesting by himself. Ray had his own opinion. He'd listen to people, but he didn't necessarily follow the masses. He was, to our community, nobody else can compare to what he did in this community. For all the years, he stood up for people who, you know, didn't have a voice, were afraid, were in the closet. He intimidated cops. You know, and I'm sure you all know that one of Ray Hill's being arrested went to the Supreme Court, and he won it. So we're here to celebrate the life that he did and the people that he got motivated to do things in this community. And I don't know, he was the first gay person I met here in Houston in 1982. And I don't know how lucky I was to be that person to meet him, because he did so much, but then he also handed things off to people. He didn't hold them. One of the things is this radio show. After I started volunteering, he let me into his trust of doing this radio show. And I originally just wanted to run the board. I didn't want to be on the air. And after a while, he says, I got other things to do. You got this. And sort of the same thing happened at Pride. When I started volunteering and getting involved in it, I spent 25 years working on Pride and bringing it into, with many, many people helping me, it wasn't me alone, bring it into a national event and a night parade. And then finally, as I was involved in the caucus, there was this incredibly genius person that built a list of people for the mail out. And his name is Don Rockamy, and of course, J.D., you knew him.
I knew him well.
You knew him well. I didn't quite know him that well, because I didn't get involved in that, in what he was doing, because he was doing it so well, and he had volunteers and stuff. But unfortunately, Don passed away, and the two computers ended up at Ray's apartment. And Ray called me and a guy named Michael Stubblefield, and he says, fix it. And he entrusted me to that list, which is probably the most valuable asset to the caucus to this date. And I'm very proud to be part of that moving forward in this community because of Ray. One other story I want to say is that at one point I was having dinner with Ray, and I was talking about Pride, and I was so proud of it. And this was in the earlier years. And Ray turns around to me and he says, 76 trombones. And I says, Ray, what are you talking about? He says, you know, our parade really isn't that good. But everybody in the community thinks it's the most fantastic thing, just like in the Music Man. Those kids couldn't play a note of music at the end of the show, but all the parents thought it was great. And that inspired me to make Pride a better event over the years with many, many other volunteers. I just met Amy Morales, right?
That's right.
And you spent a lot of time with Ray in the final days.
I did. At one point, I cried, and he said, child, stop crying. I cried because I said, why did I just meet you? Why did everybody else have so much time with you? But I've changed my attitude about that now. I didn't get as much time with him as all of you did. But I got a very important piece of his life. It's very profound, the time that I did have with him.
What was your role with that?
So first I was just a volunteer, you know, where he was at Omega House. And when I walked into his room, I fell in love with him instantly. There was an instant connection and bond. So we were friends, and then we started swapping stories. Well, he started telling stories, and I sometimes got a little story in. And we had a lot of parallels in those stories, and he became my mentor. And then I asked him if I could be his end-of-life midwife. I asked him, would you do me the honor of allowing me to be your end-of-life midwife for the rest of this journey? And he said, well, who would be more honored, me or you? And that's how we got started.
And so were some of the things you learned in that short time you spent with Ray?
Oh, my gosh.
Short but intense, probably.
You don't have enough time.
I know, yeah.
For me to tell you what I learned. He turned my life upside down, and he also turned it right side up at the same time. My family grew frustrated with me because I was spending so much time with him, but time was of the essence, and I didn't feel like I had a moment to spare. I just needed to soak him up. And I feel like he, in a way, passed the baton to me. I've always been outspoken in my own right, and I have my own issues that I want to advocate for. And he put a lot of tools at my feet and taught me how to do things, to advocate for things that are important to you. Just a lot of really emotional, really personal moments. He was invaluable to me. Meeting him has changed my life.
Yeah, I can say that. And
yeah.
JD?
Well, yeah, you mentioned the farmer analogy, where you were there and he was perhaps a pivot point in your life. And that goes down the stream. You were a pivot point in my life when you brought me into the radio, which brought me into 18 years of work with history that I had no idea I was going to do. And now I have a huge history presence, and I've heard Ray say that he will live on through my history website.
That's true.
Absolutely.
That is true.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And he's, I almost don't want to liken myself to someone who's accomplished so much, because I don't even compare, but he's definitely going to live on through me. And a lot of the things that I have already planned out, mapped out, the things that I have aspirations to do, they're because of Ray. A lot of things are going to be born out of me because of Ray.
Yeah, he was excellent at identifying.
Identify yourself.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is Travis, a friend of Ray's in the very beginning, 5 or 6 years ago. Like you said, when you met him, you didn't know exactly, you know, if you were being, how it was going to go, but he bowled you over very quickly. And like you said, the stories you've been telling me over the past few weeks reminds me of the first few months of knowing Ray and sort of being an evangelist for what he talked about, telling his stories and trying to get them right, because timing and all of that was very important. And for a man who was very particular about his words, and like you always said, he never ended a speaking engagement on a comma. This was a person who knew exactly how to, you know, he would see something in you, and I feel the same way, like his message. And, you know, now that he's not here anymore, it's, you know, on us to sort of keep, you know, telling people about his message and all of that. Like you
said, he passed the baton.
Right, passed the baton. And so, like you said, your 16-17-year-old son was telling friends, like, you don't know who Ray Hill is?
Yeah, there's a bunch of teenagers sitting around my house watching right. Citizen Provocateur and looking up Ray online, and my son is just educating these teenage boys, and he's saying it like it's just commonplace. Like, how do you not know who Ray Hill is? So he changed my son's life.
Right.
Ray has touched every facet of my world.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. And he sort of had a way of sort of, you know, you would think about stories later, and if you were just sort of telling family members or friends, you know, casually, it was like, well, no, actually, there's this story, and it connects to this, and, you know, it's a whole mosaic of people and community, and like you said, Ray sort of delegating and realizing that, you know, his time was finite, but there were people he could sort of, you know, like you said, Jay, he's like, just fix it. Just do it. You know?
Yeah, and, you know, you also got to laugh at some of the things that Ray did, and I remember just two doors down here at the, was called the Love It Inn. And it was the time when we used to have the Westheimer Culinary Arts Festival here in Montrose. Uh-huh. And the city decided it was too much trouble. Let's move it downtown. And there was a grassroots thing to do their own festival. And people came to this meeting and were discussing things, and Ray walks in late, and he basically points to one person each row, and he says, you do this, and then he went out to have dinner. And you know, we joke about that. I mean, Ray did do a lot of stuff, but he enabled people to do stuff, but he also told people to do stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and the things that we accomplished in this city, and Ray never profited off any of this stuff. He was a poor man. He was an incredibly educated man. I used to call him our Supreme Court reporter, our Nina Totenberg here in Queer Voices, mm-hmm. because he was in front of the Supreme Court with a case, and right. he won it. And all of that type of thing. So, everybody, and I only know my stories with Ray. Everybody has their own stories with Ray, which
right,
is incredible.
Right. Which I think, as you know, speaking to that, he had a way of, you know, there's those people who are, you know, they're just listening to you. They're just, you know, their moments with you are, they feel incredibly personal. But I think that, you know, we all probably have a version of that moment where it's like, well, you just had to be there. And Ray had a way of making you feel incredibly special and doing that simultaneously with 50, 100 people, whoever was in the room.
I've seen the posts on Facebook this week, people commenting on my post, and it goes on page and page and page and page.
Right.
Everybody has their own race story.
Yeah.
And he's the one behind that momentum. You know, he's the one that created that. And I'd like to go back to what you were saying about his social economic status. That's one of my favorite things about him. In my line of work, I'm not doing what I'm doing for monetary value. I mean, I have to feed my family, but I'm doing soul work. And Ray has facilitated a way that I can do what I need to do. And it's not to garner this huge reputation. I don't want credit for it. Because Ray is who he is, people are knowing who I am now. But I want to help souls, and I don't want to get rich off of helping them. And that's one of the most important lessons that, I didn't have to learn that. We parallel each other in that. I can stay poor for the rest of my life. That's okay, because the work I'm doing is so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you to, we're rotating some other people here to, and I appreciate it. And of course, Sunday at 2 p.m., City Hall.
Yes.
There's going to be a celebration of Ray's life. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be religious. Ray was not religious from what I know. And I'm looking forward to seeing so many people I probably haven't seen, because hopefully everybody will come down to it.
I was sitting with him at Jimmy Carper's funeral 4 years ago, and he said, if you're involved in one of these for me, I don't want it more than 20 minutes, and I don't want any religion.
That's right.
So I'm going to ask Andrew Edmondson to come in, and Maria also, so that we can continue on the story. And thank you, Amy and Travis.
Thanks, Jeff.
For being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. And the stories go on. Andrew, why don't you tell us a little bit about your dealings with Ray.
I'm going to ruffle some feathers here, but this is the Ray I knew. The first time I met Ray, Queer Nation had organized a huge protest when Paul Broussard was murdered. And there were probably 1,000 people on the streets of Montrose out there protesting. I'd never done anything like that before in a public way. And the lights for the TV cameras went on when they were going live, because the protesters had shut down traffic at Montrose and Westheimer for over an hour. And Ray stepped up, and he gave this incredible speech, grabbed that bullhorn, and I was like, who is that man? And afterwards, he introduced himself to me. Then flash forward 25 years later, Ray, epic raconteur, always loving to kind of add a little on to it. He was telling the story, and he said, now, when I organized that Queer Nation protest against the murders of Paul Broussard, and I was like, wait a minute, Ray. You had the kind of Sheila Jackson Lee instinct of when there's a camera there, you grab the bullhorn and you start talking, but you didn't organize that protest.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because Ray has been seen on television and radio probably more than any other GLBT person, probably even as much as Anise did in her life, but because he was there in the beginning and when nobody else wanted to do it. And he still loved doing it. But I've never had that with Ray stealing the mic from me. Well, actually, I do have a story here. We were doing a program here, and Deborah Bell was out here in working in the control room, and Ray wanted to barge in on an interview, and Deborah stopped him from coming in because Ray just thought he could walk
in. Balls they won.
Yes, and yes, but and Deborah won. Deborah won that argument. Maria?
Ray, God, what a... First of all, the man had an amazing way with words. He could get up off the cuff and give some of the most gorgeous speeches, deliver some of the best lines, get some of the most terrific reactions from an audience. Now, I suspect a big part of that was his training as a teenager preacher, where he practiced pulling an audience into him, and he knew how to work an audience. He was just a master at it. He never completed any known degree. My understanding was he went through a lot of majors, and he himself said that, you know, he called himself an uneducated, poor, gay man, ex-con, who basically... You know, he was thrilled by the fact that people were celebrating him. You know, the last time I talked to him about it, the last time I saw him over at Bearing Omega, and he was talking about, you know, how wonderful it was to get people coming over to say goodbye, to thank him. And, you know, from the mayor to council members to, you know, people who are not leaders of any kind. But thank Ray for all the work he's done in all kinds of realms. The prison show, it was an amazing breakthrough in criminal justice in the state of Texas. And because of him, legislatures are reforming criminal justice around the country because of Ray.
He fought that very hard. And, you know, there was a story, and this was, I think, in the 80s, when one of the constables was trying to get all the truancies out of Lower Westheimer, the kids out there. And I heard that Ray said he was going to go watch what the cops were doing, and this was the constables, not the police department. And I took the day off with a friend of mine named Leslie Larson, and we followed Ray up and down the street. And I remember there was a convenience store where there was like four cop cars parked there. Ray walks in, and all the cops walk out immediately. And I says, Ray, what happened? He says, they know I'm going to call downtown and ask why there's four cops, you know, fooling around there. And I also remember at the first march on Austin that we had, I went up there to broadcast here to KPFT. I heard the story. I didn't see it, that Ray was like one of the first ones to get arrested. He was in the cop car for about 10 minutes and then let him out because they knew they couldn't afford to arrest him and he'd sue them. But basically, Ray also negotiated with the cops. And you may know this, too, more than I do, because whenever there was a protest, Ray would – and people learned from this that they would say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And the cops would say, okay, you can do this or you can't do this. You'll get arrested if you do this. So there were sort of some parameters, not always. Also in 1992, when the Republican convention was here. Mm-hmm. And Ray just, you know, sometimes he knew he was going to get arrested, but he also knew where the parameters were.
Yes, in the famous march in 1977 that opposed Anita Bryant when she was coming to Houston to sing before the Texas Bar Association.
Another march that Ray took credit for organizing.
But we must also acknowledge Gary Van Ottingham,
that's right,
who was 60 to 70% of the team there, who worked meticulously. And Ray took great pride in the fact that he coordinated with HPD, mm-hmm, and the march got so large at a certain point that they said to him, okay, you can take to the streets, just keep it moving. And what I will say is, when I look back at him historically, you see his national impact when he organized the 1979 March on Washington. That was before it was kind of chic to be gay and have gay friends. Then you look, he organized Town Hall Meeting 1, and that led to the foundation or the founding of the Montrose Clinic, the Montrose Counseling Center, the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard.
The caucus?
Yes, the caucus.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, the caucus was 1975, but...
And we also must mention Pokey Anderson.
Pokey Anderson, who actually was a founder of the caucus. Ray had formed another organization. They ended up combining the organizations, but it was Pokey Anderson, and she claims two or three other queer men and an old dog, her old dog, that organized the caucus. Ray had another group, and they combined. And the thing was is that Pokey and Ray were always willing to be out and in front, and so people could take pictures of them as the leaders. And that's why Ray got recognized as the founder of all these organizations, because a lot of individuals at that point could not be out, could not get their pictures taken. I mean, it was the 70s. We still had laws against women wearing men's pants and getting arrested for silly stuff like that. Ray was, I mean, it was a Supreme Court justice that called him a citizen provocateur, which is code for a pain in the butt nuisance. And that was Ray.
Well, and that case started out here, I believe just here on Lovett Boulevard, where a cop was about to beat somebody up, and Ray says, "Why don't you pick on somebody your own size, you da-da-da?" And they let the guy go. From what I understand, they got Ray. And then Ray fought it all the way up to the Supreme Court and won it, which was interesting. And Ray helped, from what I understand, start this radio station here in 1970. And it was perfect for Ray, because Ray was a storyteller.
That's right.
To be on these microphones.
He's always been a storyteller, and he knew the magic of the narrative. He knew how to deliver it. He knew how to set it up, make sure there's a context. Ray was a magical storyteller. I'd sit and listen to him, and he'd tell me all kinds of stories. Sometimes, you know, I had to go, "Well, was that really how it happened?" Because that was Ray.
So we're talking about Ray Hill, the life of Ray Hill. This is Queer Voices. I'm Jack Valinsky, along with Andrew Edmondson and Maria Gonzalez. There will be a celebration of Ray's life Sunday, this Sunday, at City Hall, 901 Bagby. And there apparently it's not going to be too long. 2 o'clock. And there's only going to be a few speakers, and then they're going to open the mic. But Ray doesn't want it to go on all day long,
let's be for real. Ray's up in heaven watching that, basking in that glory, loving them talking about him.
He did, absolutely. But I will tell you what, all my dealings with Ray, what he liked about what I did was the organizations that I helped work on always ran under democracy. And Ray loved that. Ray absolutely loved that you would have open meetings and people could speak and people could vote on things and you had it in a public place. And he didn't like the behind the scenes type. I mean, he worked behind the scenes to accomplish things, but for organizations, they should be as open as possible.
No, I was at many of a caucus endorsement meeting where we would just fight it out left and right, and inevitably at some caucus endorsement meeting, you'd hear Ray throw down his clipboard and stomp out, and then come back. But you're right. I mean, the thing that Ray was always about was, yeah, you could try your backroom deals, but the organization needs to be visible and transparent about its decisions. There's always the, let's see how many people I can get there to help defend my position. But Ray was always about, let's follow the rules. Let's see if we can get it done. I remember a caucus meeting where there had been some changes in the, what was assumed our usual process, and I had been studying it because we got it like 2 minutes before the meeting, and I'd been studying to make sure I understood what the process was, and then I realized what it was, and at that point I had already alerted some people, keep an eye on me. Robert's Rules of Orders can get complex, so you want to keep an eye on your floor leaders And I remember at one point, I think Jolanda got frustrated and said, "What the hell is going on here?" or something like that. And Ray's comment, because I was trying to get this done the right way, was, "Trust Maria." And it got dead silent. It's like, whoa. And that was Ray. He understood. He understood different people have different strengths. And he trusted those strengths. Now, when he wanted something done, and he needed you to do something, and he knew you were someone who could help him get something done, he'd call you in. And he'd talk to you and say, "Look, this is what I want done. How can you help me?" And, yeah, you're right about Ray starting a whole lot of, claiming to have started every organization in the city. But he did help set up a lot of organizations. And he showed a lot of people how to be leaders. And ultimately, he didn't want to be the only leader in the city. That was the terrific thing. You know, and you're right. In some meetings, he'd come in and tell everybody what to do, and then he'd walk off. In other meetings, he'd sit through the meetings and finally say, "Well, you got it wrong, but okay, I guess we'll go with it because you all voted for it."
I remember the first time that he and I, Larry Bonnaries and another person, went to an international pride convention. This was, oh, I forget when it was, in the mid-80s in San Francisco. And we were walking into the beginning plenary session, which was where everybody got together and discussed things. And Ray and Larry were arguing about where they should sit. And I was very naive, and I says, "Why are you arguing about that?" And Ray says, "You can control a meeting by where you sit." And he was absolutely right. Yes.
And he taught you how to do some of that. He was a mentor of mine. He and I would sit down and talk strategy about meetings and how you ran meetings and how you helped other people run meetings. But yeah, you're right. Ray was truly a complex man, a gifted leader, but not the kind of leader you would expect. I mean,
he wasn't building empires
for
himself.
No,
he was building it for the community.
And that's what made him so special. It also made him a poor man because he wasn't doing any of this to enrich himself at all. But he was enriching the community. He made us all safer. He made us all wealthier. Because we are now accepted citizens of this country because a citizen provocateur like Ray Hill was out there getting beat up, getting tossed into jail, getting arrested all the time. I'll tell you, the one time I was really shocked about Ray, and he could be shocking, was, yeah, I wake up one day and I find out Ray Hill, Houston's gayest man, got arrested in a straight titty bar. And I'm going, what the heck? I mean, it just didn't compute there. And then, as Ray explained to me, he was always a lobbyist for the sexually explicit businesses in the city. He knew their rights. He'd basically gone into a bar to prove to the sheriff that the police were harassing the owners of these bars and their clients just because. And so, you know, he goes in within like 15 seconds, he gets arrested, of course. They accuse him of all kinds of things. And of course, he just plays the tape because that was one of the things he made sure. That it was visible as to why he was, you know, what he did to get arrested. And all he did was come up to a police officer, call him a potty word name, and he was arrested. And he was basically proving to the chief of police that these guys were harassing the business owners. And that was Ray. It was about, for him, social justice was important. But also individual rights. Sexually explicit business owners have a right to run a business. And he was one of their champions.
One thing I should jump in and say, and this pissed me off, and Ray pissed a lot of people off, but John Buice, who was one of the Woodlands Ten, who murdered Paul Broussard, Ray, at a certain point, had a change of heart and decided that John Buice had repented and that he had served his time and that he should be able to be on parole. And Ray fought for that, and that was very controversial.
It still is. It still is. And his name is John Buice.
Oh, sorry.
I was president of the Houston GLBT caucus and had been called in a couple of times to write letters to keep John Buice in jail. At a certain point, I started to investigate this and slowly began the process of reevaluating how long I wanted this man to be in jail. And yeah, yes, John Buice did kill Paul Broussard. He served 24 years for that. But also, Ray admitted he lied when he talked about the Woodlands Ten. He did it, and the reason he lied was to get police attention and to get media attention. Because he was afraid that another man in Montrose would be murdered and the police would not be there to help our community. Broussard's murder by these young men was a catalyst to addressing the horrible reality of living in Montrose and the police not willing to come into the neighborhoods to help us. The first responders not willing to help us because they were afraid we all had AIDS. Allowing crimes and violence to occur in our community, because that point in time between the homophobia and the ugliness of their attitudes about AIDS, we were a community in crisis, and this was the way Ray was going to address it. And he made an example out of Broussard's murder. I don't deny it was a murder. We can go back and forth about whether or not it was a hate crime. I just know that John Buice served 24 years. I think it was 24 years. He did ask forgiveness of the GLBT community. A lot of people were not on Ray's side when he sought to get John released early, because the sentence for John was 45 years. I think the community is divided about that.
But what you can also say on the flip side is Ray was an advocate for people behind bars, and in Texas that is not a popular position to take. We want to throw them in jail, lock them up, hang them high, and Ray was willing, long before it was chic, to step up and say, you can't treat people this way.
So this is a very brief discussion about Ray's life. So many people have different stories of talking to Ray, dealing with Ray, getting angry with Ray, and without Ray, this community could not have moved forward. I'm not sure Anise could have become mayor without Ray out there, sometimes playing bad cop against Anise as being good cop. Anise Parker, our first openly gay mayor of a major city, and of other people that ran for office. Ray was part of this community in so many ways, between prison rights, between GLBT rights, and the First Amendment rights. Those were all very dear to him.
And look in the future for a documentary about Ray that I think is coming out next year called The Problem with Ray.
And we will continue to talk about him because he's all part of us. He's all part of this community. I wouldn't be here speaking behind this microphone without Ray's encouragement. There wouldn't be so many things that other people have helped accomplish because Ray sort of helped point them or sort of told them to do it or encouraged them to do it. And what an incredible life Ray has lived, and we're all better for that.
Right.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Outsmart is an award-winning monthly publication that has delivered local and national news to Houston's LGBT audience for over two decades. The magazine is published online and can be found at www.outsmartmagazine.com. Also available in print edition, search for one of the magazine's 375-plus distribution locations around the greater Houston area. Outsmart Magazine's featured content includes news, columns, arts and entertainment, a lifestyle section, bar and club guides, and more. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio for Peace. Tune in worldwide at kpft.org.